Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. We got Richard Berman with us, too, ladies and gentlemen. Rick is a new friend. He's the president of Berman & Company, which is a public affairs firm specializing in research and communication and creative advertising. He's also the executive director at the Center for Union Facts. And recently, he published an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal that I thought was very interesting. And we reached out to him and contacted him to ask him to join us to talk about the truth about minimum wage. Rick Berman, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jim. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on the article in the Wall Street Journal. No mean feat. First, what I'd like to do is take the audience back to the history, the origins of minimum wage. A lot of people think that minimum wage is this wonderful device that a wealthy nation has created to help the created originally to help the people who were in the lower income brackets and that sort of thing. The truth is, it was a trade war between the Northeast, the New England textile companies, and the Southern textile companies, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. In fact, for the most part, the minimum wage, which was passed under Franklin Roosevelt...
In 33 or 34, as I remember.
Right, in the early 30s. The minimum wage back then really only applied to transportation and manufacturing and the mining industry. And it was really all about manufacturing, about the senators and congressmen from the North not wanting to see jobs move to the South.
That's right.
Which had lower wage rates.
That's right. The textile job. We had globalization in the early part of this, the history of our country, where the textile jobs went from England to America, which there was a lot of trouble over. And then when the textile jobs went from New England to South Carolina, for example, where they were paying a dime an hour for work, and the New England guys were getting more than that, they became uncompetitive, and they passed the minimum wage bill in the 30s to combat that. And it has nothing to do with trying to help lower income people. But that's the story that it became. And Rick, over the years, minimum wage, whenever it went up, everybody had to pay it because you had to have those workers. You didn't have any choice. And it actually, I can remember, Rick, when it impacted inflation. When a minimum wage increase actually caused wages to go up so much that it impacted inflation.
Well, you know, it's always difficult to disaggregate those kinds of impacts, but the interesting piece of the history that you're referring to is that up through the mid '60s, the minimum wage didn't apply to most low wage industries. In other words, it didn't apply to agriculture, it didn't apply to retail, it didn't apply to restaurants.
Right.
It wasn't until the mid '60s that they applied it, and then you start to find that these jobs, which generally provide the entry-level jobs in the workforce,
right,
were all of a sudden shrinking in the numbers of people that they would employ for getting the same amount of work.
These were the jobs for people like I was in my senior year in high school. I went to work, and when you went to work for a job like that, you didn't know anything. Whatever you needed to know, somebody had to teach you. And basically, it was an entry-level job for people like I was.
That's right, but you could always get these jobs if you were a young person.
Yeah.
And today the unemployment rate for young teens is anywhere from 20 to 35%, depending upon where you're living. And these are people who cannot get
hired. For some sectors, some classes of folks, some demographics, I should say, it's higher.
Oh yeah, for minority teens, it's even higher, and it's a crime. In the sense that these are people who are not going to get a job in their later teens, which means that they're not going to have any work history. No one's going to be hiring them when they're in their early 20s. And yep. we are creating another class of people who are going to be stuck on welfare.
And one of the reasons why these people are not able to get a job as much as they used to be able to, as I said, there was a time when employers just had to suck it up and pay the higher wage and hire these people. One of the reasons why that's not happening as much now is because more and more companies, smaller and smaller companies, now have the ability to use technology to hire fewer of the entry-level people, not because they want to, but because they can. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you will find today that there is less service and more self-service or more technology. I mean, there's a reason you pump your own gas. There's a reason that you don't
right.
have a busboy at McDonald's. You clean your own table at McDonald's. There are reasons why grocery stores are making self-checkout available to people. All of this is
And there's a reason why you and I should have invested more in kiosks 20 years ago, too.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's all about the government putting rules in place that encourage people to get rid of labor.
But when they sell this, when they sell minimum wage and they sell the increases, they sell it as if it is intended to help these people that we were just talking about. But the truth is, they know, because the numbers are right in front of them, they know it actually hurts those people. And
right.
and yet they push for it because they have another agenda, don't they, Rick?
They have another agenda, and two things. One,
they and I, when we say they, Rick, pardon me. When they say they, when I say they, I'm talking about the progressives.
Yes, and
people like Barack Obama.
Yep, and you're basically talking about these guys being responsive to the labor unions. I mean, let's face it, the auto workers
beholden to the labor unions.
Right. These are, but as I started to say, the auto workers, the steel workers, they don't care about minimum wage. But what they do, they operate with the unions that do find themselves in some selected areas of the low-wage economy that have labor contracts that are geared to the minimum wage.
Yep.
And so all these unions working collectively say, oh, we've got to help all these poor people. We've got to help all these people who don't have enough money to live on. Let's jack up the minimum wage, knowing full well that it triggers more increases in these labor contracts that are tied to the minimum.
And that's what we're going to do when we come back. We're going to talk some more about this, folks. I mean, if 925 or whatever the new number the president wants, if that's a good number, why don't we just raise it to $30 an hour? Why don't we just make minimum wage $50,000 a year? Anybody who gets a job, they start out at $50,000 a year. Let's give them 6 weeks vacation too. Let's throw that in there too. See, folks, where is the money going to come from? That's the question. Who does it hurt? Who does it help? Why don't they tell the truth? Rick Berman and I are going to talk about that, especially the union angle, after these messages. 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.